Blog Talk Radio.
Buttons here. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Masonic Effects, the place where we have some meaningful conversation, some exchange of ideas, and you get to sit back and relax with a mug of your favorite herbal tea and Kool-Aid, and or you share with me a glass of port. We have a conversation about things pertinent to the world of people that think about the similarities in human beings rather than their differences. This is the area where this is the group that pushes back against the sense of dystopia. Things are getting worse. Things are getting bleak. That defeatist mentality, that little earworm that gets into your head and defeats you before you have an opportunity to express your abilities and your ideas. This is the core of people that have that belief. And even when mocked, will attest to their beliefs. This is the group that feels it is important to be tested, and that the only time our beliefs, our ethics, our principles mean anything is when it's difficult. Anybody can float along and mouth words when life is easy. Politicians make hay with this. We have a rough time sorting out their true nature and character from what they feel compelled to say. And we hear these types of epithets from time to time. The test or the measure of our convictions is whether we're able to stand up to what we believe in, and do, and many of us do. This is the area where we talk about the true Mason, the people not just going through the motions, but understanding what it is that is being asked of them, and what options are in front of them. This is the importance of this whole embracing this idea of self-development. The essence of Masonry, self-development. And I'm sitting here again with the material from Montaigne. We haven't done anything about this for about, oh my goodness, 5 years, maybe even longer than that. So I want to dust it off again. It still has relevance, or it wouldn't have been, you know, wouldn't be around as Michel de Montaigne in one question and 20 attempts to an answer. So this was a... oh my goodness, this is something that we started back around 2010, and you'll be pleased to know. But when did So this has been, you know, going on. Some of the earliest material ever written was by this man. The earliest material ever written about himself, a person writing about themselves. So we'll share a little bit about that today. And I did promise that we'd get back into a bit more, illustrate a bit more about symbolism. A very dear man and good Mason handed an experiment and result to me the other day, quite happenstance. We were talking about the nature of secrets. 90% of the globe is connected. Communication allows us to connect. More people are connected to a cellular environment in the world than they are to food. Yep. Can you imagine? We are no longer able to fall back on the I think there's an argument to be said on the this notion of secrecy and privacy the way we did when we were boys. Certainly not the way we did when in the 15th century when we had vast gaps in communication. Vast gaps. This wrinkling your nose and thinking that the communication we have today is inferior is a bit, what would we say, a bit insulating, a bit smug to be even thinking that way. Because human beings, the creatures that you and I are, and I'm suspecting here that I'm not talking to the superstitious that think they were walking around the planet once upon a time with their pet dinosaur, but people that have moved on and embraced the science. This is really, I'm talking to a population that's moved on since, what, the period of the Enlightenment, where we went from having our understanding told to us based on supposition to the big challenge that's been going on ever since. Our understanding of the world and ourselves and the universe around us is based on observation. Observation. But and it helps us to distinguish fact from fantasy. And in there, we have a more nuanced, a very much more nuanced conversation about belief and faith. So if any of you are there, well, doing your little jazz hands and thinking that this means that we're condemning faith, well, best to turn the program off now, because you're going to be really unhappy with what's coming. This is where we embrace the notion that the complexity of nature is the face of the Creator. Get with it. Get with the program. This is not the place. Masonry is certainly not the place to allow the fun to be sucked out of existence. Life at times is serious. We can examine that without being droll. Where did you show me the rule book that says anything serious has to be handled in a very droll manner, long faced? Where's the rule book in that? Is that the and that forced compliance? Where does that come from? Those kind of folks want the world in uniform. And my goodness, those are the folks that want to paint with one color in their palette, that want to hear one song, one note. It's the combinations that make life interesting. And the unpredictable nature is a curiosity for us, that it merges with what we merges and mixes what we understand with what we have yet to understand. And yet we'll have those bleak-minded little folks that will say, well, every time we discover something, it raises more questions. So what's the point? Aren't we there just to answer the question? Arrogant little dogs, aren't they? Honestly, these are folks that are telling us that because they can't imagine, you know, they expect in their own little way that they're going to shove aside the Creator and impose their own mentality. Oh, yes. If I have a question, therefore there must be an answer. And if it's one of the imponderables, then let's not ask the question. Those folks, we also want to invite to go to the banquet room now. Not to sit here, not to join in, and certainly and those petulant old boys that I've seen sitting in the front row looking at their watch as soon as you open your mouth. You, I want out. No, no, go. Get that. Go on. You were brought up with better manners than that. You've just turned stupid, and you're making the rest of us old guys, grudgy old guys like me, look stupid too. So don't embarrass us like that. The rest of you, there must be one or two. Around the world, welcome to Masonic Effects, and thanks for tuning in again. It must mean that we're contributing some way, and certainly your observations and participation encourages us into answering and examining the imponderables of the nature of masonry. And I've heard that there's been some young fellows, the young entered apprentices, fellow craft and master masons, fairly new to the craft. That's what I mean by the term young, new to the craft, been invited to tune in. Now, if they're in a world looking for simple answers to their personal questions, again, turn it off, go and open a bottle of Coca-Cola, yes, and crawl into the basement and play with your Nintendo or whatever it is now. Pong? It's not Pong anymore. I'm sorry. I'm just being ridiculous here this morning, this afternoon. It's a place where we can broaden our thinking and be challenged. And if I'm not challenging you, if all I'm doing is whispering in your ear and you're nodding and agreeing with everything that's going on here, I have failed. Masonry has failed you. Not that I think I'm a conduit. We have an interesting program today. Interesting commentary, one ending, another beginning. But at the end of this program, I want you, or maybe at the start of it, I need you to give me some assistance here on the air. I need you to give me some assistance. I need you to separate out the reality of masonry, as droll, as bland, as uninspired as it might be. And it's there, oh my goodness, I have to look at this monochromatic world and I have to feel that I'm walking through the Louvre. No, or the Hermitage. No, the Guggenheim Museum. None of that. Be frank. I want you to set aside that level of reality. We're not talking about the seven hells of Dante's Inferno here. And I want you instead, the ask here is to just for a few minutes with us today to join and dream. Yes, I want you to dream. And in that dream, I want you to focus on masonry as it can be. If your imagination was able to come into fruition, was able to be made into reality, you're sitting there with the plans to St. Paul's Cathedral. You've imagined the dome, but you don't have the engineering capability to figure out how to make the darn thing. Well, it's not up to the engineers to come up with the design. Silly. This is up to the imagination of the art. When you look at it, is there no artistry in your world? Well, we have to do something about that, don't we? Of course it's there. So while you may be all hunched over and putting a blanket over your head and putting a withered finger out the window pointing at all the problems, you're not such a bloody genius yourself, you know. Is that the point of life? Is that the point of your existence as a Mason, to pick out what's wrong with the picture you see? No. It's to pick out what's right, what's going well, what's thriving, what's changing. Even whether we're here or not, life goes on. So the experience here with Masonic Effects is to deepen and enrich your life. Masonry can be an experience, but if you're just surfing along on the surface, maybe it's time you're tuning in here to put your foot into the waters. Or to, as some who come back faithfully, you jump in entirely. You drink the Kool-Aid. You aspire to the potential unleashed by these propositions put to us by by Masonry, the propositions of equality, propositions of charity and humanity. This is, and the liberal arts, liberal, not as we know it today, large L or small L idiots in a business suit running around pretending they know what they're doing. No. This is a sense of old world liberal education where there was nothing before, and these are back at a time where education, the collation of material and bringing together thoughtful and cutting edge material with mentors was there. It was introduced to inspire this sense of knowledge. The purpose was knowledge, to know, to understand, not to make a buck. Oh, and get over yourselves, you folks addicted to a particular socioeconomic ethos. This experiment that we've been going through is polarized. We have so many people living in dire and utter poverty. A dominant group will say they should be happy for what they have. Shut the hell up. Be happy for what you have. Close the door while I count my money. The wealth that we've perpetuated is obscene, but this hubris. Bring back the Republic. I like the Roman attitude initially to hubris. It was against the law. And you know, they would, if you, I kind of like the idea of justice. If you and I were in front of the, are being judged by our peers, our peers were selected from whoever showed up in the Markham in the Agora that day, right? And then a jury would be picked. And it wasn't like a jury of 12 or, you know, the jury for Plato's trial was thought to be well over 100 people. And it wasn't like they were particularly a disinterested group. No. But if I had cheated you in a business deal and let's make it the other way around. You had cheated me in a business deal and we're both saying, oh, no, that's not true. The jury would find one of us guilty and the justice would be meted out at the time. You lay hands on the bugger and flail him. And if he dies, well, shit, he dies. And if you're kicking his arse, well, you're kicking his arse. There's justice for you. You think we've gone a little past that mark? Well, that's a sensitive area right now, isn't it? Because we have trial by public. And this is as important as it ever has been to a race, to a democracy, how we define the reasonable limits to justice. Now it's justice by innuendo. Well, we've had that for hundreds of years. And the women around us will attest to that. The women of Salem, how many thousands? The Catholic Church killed a lot of people. The Catholic Church murdered a lot of women and cited them for being witches. An ignoble fact of history? Yeah. Yep. So you got the message here? We need to be able to stand up to this. And which one of us wants to stand up to the mob? Be careful. This is not a place for us to be foolhardy. But neither is it a place for us to subscribe to this notion that without knowing the facts, I can judge your character and judge your guilt. Far from that. Masons among us, stand up for this. At least understand in your own mind. We do not need to participate in this. But how we present ourselves, that takes some thinking, doesn't it? So here, how would a principled and ethical man and woman, Mason, approach the world, approach these delicate questions? Particularly when we see the so-called evidence, and I say that advisedly, I don't know if what is being reported about what's going on in different parts of the Middle East is accurate. I don't know that, and I'm not there. So I have to rely on consensus amongst reliable sources of information. It's the same way I do when I'm looking. Same thing I do when I'm looking at my going out sailing. I use a service from New Zealand called PredictWind, and what they do is go through these different algorithms, these different weather algorithms, different systems, and see if there's overlap. So how do you predict the weather? You have there. It's an approximation. It's the same as success in life. It's an approximation. So it gives us overlaps. And when we see two or three of the systems overlapping, then we know we're probably right to look at that window, what's being subscribed by that group. Or if we see an outlier that's always pretty accurate, then we know that we can trust the outlier. But that comes from observation, doesn't it? And when we are able to observe that level, then we can learn to trust. Similarly, with information coming into us, we need to be able to validate it. So if you're hearing something tantalizing here, make sure that you take it upon yourself to validate it some way. Our intent here is not to mislead you in any way. That would serve no purpose. I don't get up in the morning thinking enough about that for it to make any sense. Certainly not with the world of privacy swirling around. Now, I hinted in this big spiral of change. And it's wonderful. We've always been in that spiral. The experiment asked the sun to find out the most sacred word in masonry. The sun, being a non-Mason, I don't like that term, Mason and non-Mason, the sun being an intelligent man. And the result, about, a minute and a half, I think, a couple of minutes. So we delude ourselves. We want to continue to delude ourselves that that secrets, as long as we are closed-minded to what's going on around us, then we have secrets. Really? That would lead us, we'd be making ourselves vulnerable to a lot of mockery, and it would invalidate the nature of masonry to do that. No, privacy is different. Privacy is different than secrecy because it's the experience. There are some secrets I hold that experience, the experiences that you have when we initiated you, that is a secret. That, what was going through your mind? And let's be generous. That emotional and intellectual impact, something so different, so unique, a language put together in ways that is unheard of before. Questions being put to us that hadn't been put to us before. And being in the presence of so much effort, so much concern. That experience, private. And to have that experience about being made a Mason, don't be fretting with me. I'm not talking about just commingling, throwing everybody up in the air, everything up in the air in a blanket and seeing what falls out. No. I wouldn't disrespect women Masons. I would not. That's insulting. And I certainly would not insult the male fraternal order of Masonry. No, I would not do that. They exist, they coexist, but not in the sense of mingling. The women and Masons, as I know it, are doing quite well and thriving. And after the suppression that's been going on by the dominant male societies, are emerging and doing well. Thank you very much, again, from what I'm told. So we'll leave that aside. We're doing well. We're looking for the similarities in human nature that draws us together. And in this time where this dystopian sense of the world, the cynic, is bragging. You know, the tongue-in-cheek message is, I can say what I want because I really think less of you. I think you're stupid. And I think you'll support me just because you like me to be your clown. And I'll be your fool. Yep, I'll perform for you. And you keep applauding for me and I'll keep performing for you. And you and I look at the disgrace. He's a person that probably needs a bit more of a sit down with the likes of you folks. Sit down, yeah. Maybe go for a long walk and keep walking until his lips stop moving. Keep walking along the path until he begins to listen. And then keep walking along the path as you're talking with him until he begins to question, which means he begin to understand. You may be walking with him for a long, long time. But such is the nature. Hmm? Here's a. So we always curate the show with some, I think, really interesting music. This is from a sax player, Paul Desmond. Some of you may know of his work. This is his tune, Emily. It's done a few years ago. Hope you like it. Thank you. sublime, just so beautiful, just so tasteful. The touch, Today I'm drawn to the part of the world that produced some brilliant writers in Russia. Here, it is better to have dreamed 1,000 dreams than never to have dreamed at all. Heard that over and over again, haven't you? You didn't know, maybe, like me, Alexander Pushkin. Such a delicate touch. Fearing no insult, asking for no crown, receive with indifference both flattery and slander, and do not argue with a fool. Something, some merit in that. The less we show our love to a woman or please her less and neglect our duty, the more we trap and ruin her surely in the flattering toils of philandery. Don't be sad. Don't be angry if life deceives you. Submit to your grief. Your time for joy will come. Believe me. Then came a moment of renaissance. I looked up. You again are there, a fleeting vision, the quintessence of all that's beautiful and rare. Imagine not only thinking like that, but being able to say that. And if you feel that you understand that, to read that to your partner. Oh, well, we can't do that. No, we're too constricted. Yeah, not at all. You're only held by the bounds of your imagination. I loved you. Even now, I may confess, some embers of my love their fire retain, but do not let it cause you more distress. I do not want to sadden you again. Hopeless and tongue-tied, yet I loved you dearly, with pangs the jealous and the timid know. So tenderly I loved you, so sincerely I pray God grant another love you so. You see, you may not have you may be tongue-tied, but you can express this kind of passion and commitment in your behavior without ever saying the words. Do you know this? Well, surely you do. You're students of the arts. What emotion, what expression, what experience, what story do the artists convey to us? They engage us. The painter, the poet, the dancer, the singer, instrumental. That when you hear the sound, people like me, when we hear the sound of the bagpipes off in the distance, it's just like... An alert. It goes to a different place inside of us. I mean, inside of a lot of people. Even though I've been many generations away from Scotland, it was 1,000 generations there, is the saying, and I tend to believe it. So all of you have that sense of inspiration. And if you don't, you might be a bit Scottish. We'll put you in a kilt and see how that makes you feel. It'll change your attitude to life, I swear, you know. Anyway, well, let's get to round two. Let's get around to the commentary today. Self-development. Wealth and power, however they appear, require many others to exploit. We can't just get wealthy unless we can exploit something. Learning to live with that may be one reason money does not buy happiness. What does it do to a human spirit when you realize that? Bling, you wear a gold tooth or a gold chain or a gold toilet. What does that do to you? Learning to live with that may be one reason money does not buy happiness. I don't think many have tried anymore, do we? While committing acts of humility in the service of others, acts of charity, empathizing with the people ignored and unheard, that's masonry. Our nuanced conversation about charities, different forms of it, not that grinding insulting, pompous media. Here's a dollar. Shut up and grab yourself a coffee and get a job. You know that smug crap? It's terrible. That has nothing to do with masonry. It's not even on the list. No, it's the performance of something that is right and that you're doing because you know it's right and there's a need. Yeah, it's you judging yourself. And until you do that, you're not the man you're not the man or woman that you could be. Science recently discovered helping others is the resilient source of a contentment transferable to those who perform those actions. The deepest contentment experienced. We can see this even in very, very small children when they're learning. They're still not quite socialized, but they're learning how to interact. And the healthy, happy children are the ones doing for somebody else. Not the competitive little rat. No, no. That person's good. That child is going to grow up to have difficulty. We know this. Now we're going to tell a parent this kind of information. No, that's wrong-minded of us. But what do we want to emphasize in the child and in ourselves is this sense of balance. How do you balance that off and say, well, life is all worthwhile? When you're able to do something and keep your mouth shut, it's one of the hardest things. Oh, we want to give a little pin or get you to stand up so we can give you some applause. Or we want to give you some kind of acknowledgement, because after all, publicity is what it's at, baby. But still, it's as if the sensitive-minded won't notice, and they always do. I was taught this when I used to go to a luncheon, just a few old fellows from the lodge getting together. And when there was need, it wasn't that anybody said anything, but there was just, everybody seemed to have a $100 bill tucked into their billfold. And the need was taken care of and nothing was said. And as if the conversation was going off in this other direction, but this need was addressed. It was an unusual experience. It's an unusual experience. I'm not saying every tight-fisted person around me should be doing that. I'm saying every tight-fisted person around should understand why that's being done and what they're missing. So psychology recently observed this. We've known this. It's been part of our teachings for 1,000 years, but we've discovered it through observation, this benefit. Self-development is at the core of masonry, whether that is intellectual, spiritual, emotional, whether it's internal or external. If being in the presence of scholarly men is affirming, then so be it. If drinking from the cup of knowledge is suitable, it is found in masonry. Comfort, challenge, familiarity, it is all about meaning. It is about understanding. It is about wanting. So farm boys have been reading Byron secretly and listening to Brahms and favoring Shelley over Wordsworth and influencing the rest of us as sources of inspiration. Helping a neighbor, facing down critics with a controlled temper. Masonry is a process, never imposed. It's somewhat like the right of way. The right of way is always given, never taken. Never imposed, many times confusing and always challenging. Ideas become a way of life. And the life becomes the quest. It pleases the imagination to be one. Yeah. Live performance. Where else could you hear it, eh? Yeah. Dave Brubeck, take 5. You can all say that you've been part of a group that listens to Dave Brubeck, and around the world, you've to listeners from the Philippines and India. I want to thank you for tuning in. Brilliant. Yeah, it's quite there. And France, we have something coming up for listeners from France. It's interesting to be influenced by the audience. It's a wonderful experience. We've talked a little bit. We've been turning a little bit to symbolism as it speaks to our work that we're doing, self-development. What does art do for you that a conversation with a good friend cannot? I want you to think about that. Slow it down a little bit. For those of you that are not comfortable holding a thought, you're not used to it, this will take a little bit of practice. It's like the difference between hitting a note on a keyboard and rounding it out so that there's actually some emotion to it. When we're listening to this music, this is music that was created by people that were subjected to very difficult times. This is music that came out of pain and suffering and degradation. These are the children of slaves. And it came out of that part of the world, but as we know today, it's a sound that we say it speaks to us around the world. It resonates. It resonates very rapidly through Masonic halls. Did you also think that masonry would have existed as long as it has unless it was some kind of satisfaction or fun? No, far from it. Far from it. We can find other tedious tasks. As much as the Calvinists amongst us will try and suck the fun out of a meeting, no, it's a good time. You and I know that when we get together and we have a good time, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. And you've been there. Free and accepted. Let me get into a little bit of this stuff by, I think, a writer that is really quite remarkable, and I love his clarity. Colin Dyer. Some of you might know of his work. But as he's teaching us, or he's talking to us about free and accepted masonry, he's talking about the beginnings. And let me pick up from there. Just as it may influence our thinking about where we came from and, you know, the nature of it. Like, if you're a student of your instrument, you want to know a little bit about what it was and what it could be. If you're sitting down at the piano, you want to know a little bit about Bach and that. Why the serious musicologists revere his work? And why is it so enduring? You would want to know a little bit about that, wouldn't you? At least to be, you know, considered a rounded musician, you might. Doesn't mean that it's prescribed. Of course not. But free and accepted, like us. Certainly in existence at the beginning of the 18th century and certainly existed earlier. And its main tenets were clear, but its symbols and detailed practices were few, and those few were rough, and with some different local ideas in different places. So it's like, you know, you guys are way over there had your own ideas about symbols, and you guys way over there in that other valley, you had a different kind of, well, what the hell, you know, different strokes. But at the end of the 18th century, there was a complete system, and perhaps still with some differences in different places, you think. But the meaning is certainly not, is varied. It's certainly unique. This notion of compliance is not Big Brother. It's not Orwellian. This is the way it is. There's an orthodoxy, and you think this way. Far from it. Far from it. The masonry wouldn't have a philosophy or a sense of ethic if that were the case. They wouldn't have this kind of liberal notion. We wouldn't be studying the arts and sciences, the maths. You know? No, we wouldn't. Although has no part in this. There were also in existence and active a system of number and a number of additional Masonic degrees, in most cases practiced in the craft lodges themselves or associated with them. And this whole development of the basic principles of 100 years earlier had taken place during what we know as the Age of Reason, when those who practiced free masonry and who must have activated this development have shown that they were aware of the old mysteries and their practices in some detail and were prepared to claim direct descent from them. It's like you've probably heard people declaring descent from the Egyptians, although there's no evidence to ever show that. None. Of course we would look seriously at that, wouldn't we? Really, all of this has been handed to us from the maybe closer to the mystery plays of what's that old town in England? The ancient town, York. Yes. Perhaps there in the mystery plays, who practiced Freemasonry and must have activated this development, have shown that they were aware of the old mysteries and were prepared to claim direct descent without perhaps more than a mere mention of their direct historical descent. Many writers have made direct comparison with the old mysteries of the system of the free and accepted Masons. For somehow, from the comparatively rude speculative state of 1700, the fuller system developed by 1800 had much more of the old mysteries in it. There must be more than a possibility that the knowledge of these old mysteries provided source material which was put into this development. In the pamphlet of 1730, A Defense of Masonry, which has been referred, we often will refer to that, there is reference to the mysteries with peculiar honor and veneration. A learned author is given a description of his idol. In all periods, Harpocrates, H-A-R, the god of silence, was formed with his right hand placed near the heart, covered with a skin before, full of eyes and ears. The skin that covers it is full of eyes and ears to signify by this that many things are to be seen and heard, but little to be spoken. Among the same people, their great goddess Isis had always the image of a sphinx placed on the entrance of her temples, and their secrets should be preserved under sacred coverings, that they might be kept from the knowledge of the vulgar, such as the riddles of Sphinx. Pythagoras, by traveling into Egypt, became instructed in the mysteries of that nation, and here he laid the foundation of all his symbolical learning. There are several writers that have mentioned this philosopher and given an account of his sect and institutions can convince us that fully Freemasonry, as published by the Dissector, is very nearly allied to the old Pythagorean discipline. For once we can be persuaded, it may, in some circumstances, very justly claim its descent, to mention a few. Upon the admission of a disciple, he was bound by a solemn oath to conceal the mysteries from the vulgar and uninitiated. The mysteries. Right now, are we revealing a mystery? Well, if we are, what the hell is it? So, relax, and your glass, I think it's getting empty, top it up again. The principal and most efficacious of their doctrines were, says Jambilcus, ever kept secret amongst themselves. They were continued unwritten and preserved only by memory to their successors, to whom they delivered them as mysteries of the gods. They conversed with one another by signs, and they had peculiar words which they received upon their admission and which were preserved with great reverence as the distinction of their sect. For is the jurisdiction remark of Lartrius, as generals use watchwords to distinguish their own soldiers from others, so it is proper to communicate to the initiated peculiar signs and words as distinctive marks of a society. The Pythagoreans professed a great regard for what the dissector calls the four principles of masonry: a point, a line, a superficies, and a solid, and particularly held that a square with a very proper emblem of the divine essence, that a square was a very proper emblem of the divine essence. We put a square up on the wall for the world to see. How many of them see the divine in that? The gods, they say, who are the authors of everything established in wisdom, strength, and beauty, are not improperly represented by the figure of a square. Many more instances may be produced. Would the limits of the design admit that there was a false brother, one Hipparchus of this sect, who out of spleen and disappointment broke through the bonds of the oath and committed the secrets of the society to writing? Hipparchus, in order to bring the doctrine into contempt, he was immediately expelled the school as a person most infamous and abandoned, as one dead to all sense of virtue and goodness, and the Pythagoreans, according to the custom, made a tomb for him as if he had actually been dead. Can you imagine? So whatever it was, he decided he's going to violate the oaths and print it up, you know, so it can be communicated. And what do the boys do? He disappears to them. And they build his tomb. I'd say there's a message in that, wouldn't you? My, certainly a very clear message. You are dead to us. Say what you want. We take this seriously. The true Masons amongst us here on the program are that fine line. You take it seriously. Whether other people mock it or not, whether they're crude and tasteless in their attitudes, doesn't matter. Do you take it seriously? Do you treat it as the divine? Do you act that way? The shame and disgrace that justly attended this violation of his oath threw the poor wretch into a fit of madness and despair. Remember, this is the infamous Hipparchus. He was part of the Pythagorean school. And the reaction to his violation of his own oaths, to the reaction, threw the poor wretch into a fit of madness and despair, so that he cut his throat and perished by his own hands, and which surprised us, many of us. His memory was so abhorred after death that his body lay upon the shore of the island of Samos, and no other burial than in the sands of the sea. He had no other burial than in the sands of the sea. Some of this language will be familiar, and you'll be piecing me. You'll know what part of puzzles were being talked about, but you may not have realized the source. The Essenes among the Jews were a sort of Pythagoreans and corresponded in many particulars with the practice of the fraternity as delivered in the dissection. So, for example, when a person desired to be admitted into their society, he was to pass through 2 degrees of probation before he could perfect master of their mysteries. Again, sounded all familiar? Yeah. Good stuff. Padam, padam. She's singing about pain. Share with you that may not be fans of poetry. You're gonna have a hell of a time with me. I don't think it's boys and girls in India that are tuning in, or that lot in France. I think there's a lot of poets amongst you. How would I know? Certainly in Scotland. Oh my goodness, we've a nation that celebrates the minds of the writers. I mean, Robbie Burns Day just passed on the 25th. A celebration. This is just remarkable. But I want to share with you the work of a delicate and insightful mind, Alexander Pushkin. I'm a bit obsessed right now. I think I have a bit of a mania and a bit of an obsessive nature to my personality. I just find him remarkable. The more I study, the more I understand. And then I find I have to understand a bit of the context. So have to read about Russia and try and understand. It's a remarkable history. Fascinating. So anyway, to the chase scene, I wondered who, if you and I were sitting around with Alex and he wasn't trying to get into a duel with one of us, you've got to love that, like, slap in the face, and all right, we'll go out and grab your pistol, we're going to shoot at you. Well, okay, eventually that's going to catch up, which it did. But, you hothead, sit down, you son of a, and when you're done with the duel, come on back in, it's going to be your round. I don't care, just... You imagine the kind of over the top, the drama. Could you sit down with this guy? Drama, oh. You would sit down and you say, Alex, what are you reading these days? Yeah, okay, well, I like your work, but what kind of influences you? What stuff? He had a favorite, a poet that he favored, Evgeny Baratynsky. Yeah. So let's sample just a little bit of Baratynsky's work, just to see what the great mind of Pushkin did with it. You know, how did it penetrate? Here. This is, I think, very, very revealing. It's, I love this poem. It's called Don't Imitate. The gift is special here, and with its own greatness, it is great. Either Doratov or the new Shakespeare, you are not liked. They hate returning, yet the law of a bard and Israel's the same. To make the idol is the crime and shame. And when Micuits, oh, my bear, elated, I saw you by the Byron's feet. I thought, rise, rise immediately. A priest humiliated, rise and remember, you yourself a god. Oh, oh, don't imitate. He was a writer that was very, very committed to this sense of nature. One of the romantic poets of his time. And he wrote, you know, still I rise, the road not taken, if you forget me, dreams. This is a phenomenal woman. He's lauded by Pushkin as the finest Russian elegiac poet. And for a long period, when his reputation was on the wane, Baratynsky was rediscovered by Russian symbolism poets as a supreme poet of thought. There, just a little sample. Today, we have the ongoing work of, it's not the work, the joy, the matter of discovery. I don't think we can do this if we see this as tedium. Our work may be very satisfying. Our work may be pulling out a panel and grabbing our brushes and completing the work and gessoing it, not once but twice. We get the texture we want and we're sanding it down, and then our work might be to put a paint to canvas and see where we're going with that. Have a beautiful friend, his work is just becoming more and more inspired, and yet I think her work is aggressive, but I want it to be more, I look at it like I want to see inside the work. You know, it's like when you look at the path, you're looking at the flowers, the sunflower fields, and you want to walk amongst them. And you know what it feels like when you're walking in a field of sunflowers. You ever drive across this great country I'm in, and you see this little faces following the sun. And it's just like this crowd of little tiny people. And these beautiful yellow faces are following the sun across the sky. It's a magical part of existence. Yeah? You have... we are being taught and being exposed and being reminded of the need to be authentic. I have, and you have this year too, when somebody is just blowing smoke, you know it. Whether they do or not, it doesn't matter. They're insincere. And yet masonry seems to revolve around that notion. You're the lot that will, after our friend Hippocrates revealed the secrets, you're the bunch that said, right, piss on him, huh? We'll build a tomb to him. He's dead to us. And by the way, here's a symbol of it, buddy. And what does Knucklehead go and do? He kills himself. Well, you brought it on. What was he killing? Was he killing the idea of what he had done, the realization of what he had done? Well, you carry on and they prattle on and they're smug and they're hubristic, but it does not mean that they're tolerated. And in your own way, maybe you're building those tombs to them while they're still there. Symbolically, they're dead to you. Well, this is there's an authenticity and a also if we're moving toward any levels of influence and leadership, there's a vulnerability to it. There's no muscular conversation when a person is a true leader. True leaders, we can train dogs to bite. We can do that. True leadership is a matter of vulnerability and being accessible. And to this day, the listeners to Masonic Effects have supported that kind of notion. Our Grand Lodges do what they need to do to protect and preserve the legacy of our order. You and I, on the other hand, are that whole matter of imagination that got us where we were and where we are. But the hardest thing we have to, one of the very most difficult skills to learn is silence. So you've heard just a sample of it today. We'll go on with that. Especially some of the ideas of the Essenes. It's not so much about them. It's like, what are they drawing about you? What are they drawing out about you? I want to walk through that art gallery with you as you dream. I want to walk through that art gallery and I want to see through your eyes for a moment the work that inspires you. And I want to understand as much as I can, as much as you would share, why a particular piece of work inspires you. And what is the next question that is the struggle on your lips? It's wonderful. I want to see the cathedrals. I want to see the interior of your lodges. I want to see the atmosphere. I want to see the atmosphere that your mind's eye creates. I want to hear the sounds. I want to experience the light. I want to see what you see about the potential of the craft. And then day by day, moment by moment, as you improve, and I want to see your contribution. How do you bring about that dream? Every day as a Mason, we simply wake up trying to be a little bit better than we were yesterday. It's amazing. Thank you very much for tuning in again today. I'm going to leave you with a little Stanley Abernathy, only when I think of you. And I look forward to having you join us again next week. A shout out. I'd like to thank our listeners from Brazil. I don't know what to say to you. I understand 60,000 murders in a year. It just seems like a nation, a very angry nation, a very grieving nation. South Korea, thank you for tuning in, and I hope the Olympics showcases your country as you deserve. And India, where are the Masons of China? And, you know, where are our listeners from Russia? Do we have any? Yes, we do. So get our support from the hinterland here in Canada. Couldn't be any better. Love this country. Love you guys. So we'll talk again about asking some of the hard questions. Masonry and homophobia, masonry and women. We'll get into that. Oh, don't be sucking your teeth and running around in circles. We're confident enough to be able to have thoughtful conversation. And in the meantime, I want you to dream, please. If I can want anything for you, I want you to dream about the Mason in you, about the grasping that potential, about aligning your dreams with your aspirations. We'll talk about that, how to guide your dreams. Yeah. And just touch a little bit on the work of Carl Jung in that respect. Kind of interesting work. See you soon. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.